Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Hello and welcome to the first edition of Live on Air, the Irish programme for 2020. Well, in Ireland and in the UK and in the US, it's done and it's dusted. Here in Spain, today is the last day of the Christmas, and I hope that everybody is enjoying the day that's in it, the 6th of January. Of course, Little Christmas, it used to be called in Ireland, or Little, or was it Women's Christmas, it was called as well. So anyway, wherever you happen to be, I hope that you're either done and dusted with the Christmas, or you're still enjoying it, whichever way it is. Thank you for joining me today on Live on Air, and I have a lovely program lined up for you, I think. Do you remember a couple of weeks ago I was talking to a Derry-based journalist called Kieran O'Neill, and I spoke to him in anticipation of his visit to Malaga. He was coming to Malaga basically because he had met a Live on Air's Irish-Spanish cultural correspondent and consultant, Jose Antonio Sierra, when he was in Derry. And Jose Antonio told him all about Robert Boyd. And so he said, right, I'm coming to Malaga to find out about it. So we spoke to him in advance of his journey and said we'd catch up with him in the new year. That's exactly what I did a couple of days ago. I spoke with Kieran to get an update as to how the trip went. And I think you'll enjoy that little chat. Patricia Traynor has another story for us today, the first of 2020. And I will be also introducing you to some of the names that you may recognise. We have the famous Irish birthdays as per usual. I'll have the number one song from this very day, the 6th of January, back in 1964 in Ireland. And there'll be a few other bits and pieces in there as well. As always, if you would like to get in contact with me at any stage of the programme or in relation to the programme, you can email, which is the best number, the best way to do it. You can email Ger, G-E-R, at tre.radio. Simple as that. Will we get stuck into it, so, and get into the birthdays? I think we should. Today, the 6th of January, Colonel James Fitzmaurice was born. Now, Colonel James Fitzmaurice was called Ireland's greatest ever aviator. He was born in Dublin in 1898. I don't know much about him, but with a name like that and a title like that, I think I should find out about him. PJ Kavanagh, the novelist, was born in 1931 on this day. Johnny Giles, footballer, pundit and journalist, was born in Dublin on this day in 1940. You'll hear his name mentioned again in a piece of music that I'm going to play very shortly. Noel Pearson, the theatre impresario and film producer, was born in 1941. Now, tomorrow is the 7th of January. Robert Sheehan, the actor. You may kind of have come across him firstly in Love Hate, that wonderful series set in Crimeland, Dublin. Well, Robert Sheehan has gone on to great things in theatre and indeed movies. He was born in Portlaoise in 1988. Kenny Egan, the boxer, was born in Dublin in 1982 on that day. And Elizabeth Bowen, the novelist and short story writer, was born on that day in 1899. Wednesday is the 8th of January. Kevin Caniff, Bowron player with the Chieftains, was born in 1945. He joined the Chieftains in 1976, and you'll hear music from the Chieftains shortly. Juliet Lover, the actor, was born in Newry in 1779. And Lucien Bull, inventor of the electrocardiograph, was born in Dublin in 1876. Thursday is the 9th of January. Kerry Condon, the actor, was born in Thurles in 1983. She's gone on to do great things on television and screen in the US. George Buchanan, the poet, novelist and journalist, born in County Down in 1904. Danny Morrison, the novelist, was born in 1952. Brian Friel, the playwright and author, born near Omagh in County Tyrone in 1929. And Ray Houghton, the footballer, born in 1962. And he too will be mentioned in a piece of music that I'll play shortly. All right. Yeah, the 10th of... It's all very mysterious, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, the 10th of January, Brian Cowan, former Taoiseach, was born in Clara in County Offaly in 1960. Brian Cowan hasn't been well in recent times, so we wish him well for 2020. Barney Rock, the legendary footballer, was born in Dublin in 1961. The 11th is Saturday, and Henry Shefflin, wonderful hurler, was born in Ballyhale in County Kilkenny in 1979, and a man that he would have hurled against on many occasions, Clareman, Tony Griffin, was born in Clarecastle, Ballyea in 1981. So happy birthdays in advance. And finally, next Sunday is the 12th of January. Edmund Burke, Irish statesman, author, orator, political theorist and philosopher, was born in Dublin in 1729. Jennifer Johnston, the writer, she won a fabulous award for The Old Jest, but indeed a long list of titles to her name. She was born in Dublin in 1930. Thomas Patrick Ashe, member of the Gaelic League, the Irish Republican Brotherhood and a founding member of the Irish Volunteers, was born in Lispole in County Kerry on that day in 1885. Molly Allgood was an actor. Her stage name was Moira O'Neill. She was born in Dublin in 1887. Matt Molloy from the Chieftains. So guess what we're getting today? The Chieftains, yeah. Matt Molloy was born in 1947 and Steve Travers, surviving member of the Miami Showband Massacre, was born in 1951. So you can guess we'll have some music from the Miami Showband as well. So there we go. That's a quick look at some of the famous birthdays that we had for you. As we had two members of the Chieftains celebrating birthdays this week, let's start with this one from the Chieftains. It's called The Morning Dew. Wonderful sound of the Chieftains. Morning Dew. We play that because two members of the group, Matt Molloy, was born in 1947 on the 12th, so next Sunday he celebrates his birthday. And Boron player Kevin Kniff was born on the 8th, so we wish him happy birthday in advance as well. So there we go. That's it for this particular part of the programme. Let's do a very quick break. Come back to me just after that, and we'll have the number one song in Ireland from this day back in 1964.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome to the second part of the programme. I told you that I would play for you the number one song in Ireland for this day, the 6th of January, back in 1964. You've heard of a man by the name of Dickie Rock. He has been a sensation since the late 50s and the early 60s with the various show bands. You heard me mention Steve Travers a few minutes ago from the Miami Show Band. Well, Dickie Rock was at number one in Ireland on this day in 1964 with a song backed by the Miami Show Band as well. Yeah, it's a song called There's Always Me, number one on this day, 1964 in Ireland. Dickie, take it away.
When the evening shadows fall and you're wondering who to call for a little company, there's always me. If your great romance should end and you're lonesome for a friend, darling, you need never be. There's always me. I don't seem to mind somehow playing second fiddle now. Other loves may come and go, but my love for you will be eternal.
Dickie Rock and the Miami Show Band from this day back in 1964. It was sitting on top of the Irish charts. A song called There's Always Me. Patricia Traynor and I get to sit together regularly. And when we do, she always has a few stories for me. Patricia, I hope you have a few more ready now, because I'll be visiting very soon. There'll be a rat-a-tat-tat on the door, but we'll organise that in advance. And here she is with another riveting story.
Well, hello. Today we're going to talk about a street in Spain called La Calle de los Irlandeses, which means the Street of the Irish. We have seen that there are quite a few streets in Spain named after Irishmen. For example, O'Donnell Street in Madrid, Calle O'Donnell, named after Leopoldo O'Donnell, or O'Donnell, who had been Prime Minister of Spain on several occasions. Imagine, an Irishman. Well, he was the descendant of the great Irish O'Donnell clan. And Count O'Reilly Street in Cádiz, Calle Conde de O'Reilly, named after Alexander O'Reilly, who was born in County Meath and who became the Spanish Governor General of Louisiana. But there is a little street in Madrid which used to be called St. Gregory Street or Calle San Gregorio, but which is now called the Street of the Irish, La Calle de los Irlandeses, and not because it is full of Irish pubs, I hasten to add, but because it was in that area in 1629, that the College of St. Patrick was located there. This college was established for the formation of Catholic men from Ireland who wished to become priests and who had been forced to leave Ireland due to the persecution which ensued after the excommunication of Elizabeth I in 1570 by Pope Pius V. Not only was there a college there, there was also a small oratory, a hospital and a church, St. Patrick's Church, or La Iglesia de San Patricio. and the locals began calling the street Calle de los Irlandeses, the Street of the Irish. The name has remained with it ever since, and in fact, the name is still there on a plaque. However, the church no longer exists. Actually, it wasn't the first Irish college to be founded in Spain. The first was set up in Valladolid in 1590, but was transferred to Salamanca 2 years later. It was founded by the Reverend Thomas White, formerly of Clonmel, in 1593. And that church remained open until, or that college remained open until 1951. Another college was established in Santiago de Compostela in 1605, and it remained open until 1769. Seville opened an Irish college in 1608, and it remained open until 1769. The Church of San Patricio, or St. Patrick's Church, remained open until it was destroyed during the Spanish Civil War between 1937 and 1938. And all that remains today are some archives and the name on the street of the wall, Calle de los Irlandeses, the Street of the Irish.
So we're everywhere, aren't we? Indeed we are. Thank you very much to Patricia. I look forward to catching up with you in the next couple of weeks. And Happy New Year to you and all your family. I know that we've been in touch over the holidays anyway. Right. I did say to you that Johnny Giles would feature in a song. And I mentioned that Ray Houghton would feature in a song. Ray Houghton celebrates his birthday. And I don't think anybody can hear, sorry, any Irish person can hear Ray Houghton's name without remembering 1988 and the game against England when he stuck it in the back of the net. And Christy Moore wrote a song about it. And here it is.
It was in the year of 88 in the lovely month of June, when the gadflies were swarming and dogs howling at the moon.
On heat on the front here.
How it rose, rebeads and sandwiches for Stuttgart we began. Jocks are packed as German phrase book and jump plates for the van. Oh, well, some of the lads had never been away from home before. It was the first time Whacker put his foot outside of Inchicore. And before we left for Europe, we knew we'd need a plan. So we all agreed the Joxer was the man to drive the van. In Germany, the Autobahn was like the long mile road. There was every make a car and van, all carrying the full load. Four transits and hiaces and an old Bedford from Tralee, with the engine overheating from long haul and duty free. Well, there was fans from Ballyfermot, Ballybuck and Ballymun, on the journey of a lifetime, and a crack was 91. Well, Joxer met a German's daughter on the banks of the River Rhine, and he told her she'd be welcome in Ballyfermot any time. A big falcher wrote Fräulein. And as soon as we found Stuttgart, we got the wagons in a ring. Sean Oak got out the banjo and Peter played the mandolin. Oh, there was fans there from everywhere, attracted by the sounds of the first flag y'all in Europe, and Joxer passed the flagging round. But the session, it ended when we'd finished all the stout. The air mattresses inflated and the sleeping bags rolled out. As one by one we fell asleep, Joxer had a dream. He dreamt himself and Jack Charlton sat down to pick the team. Joxer dreamt they both agreed and Packy Bonner straight away, and that Moore and Whelan and McGraw were certainly to play. But tempers they began to rise, patience wearing thin. Jack wanted Cascarino, but Joxer wanted Quinn. And the dream turned into a nightmare, Joxer stuck the head in Jack, who wanted to bring Johnny Giles and Eamon Dunphy back. Oh, well, the cock crew in the morning, it crew but loud and shrill, and Joxer woke up in his sleeping bag many miles from Arbor Hill.
And next morning none of the experts gave us the slightest chance. They said that the English team would lead us on a merry dance. Oh, with their Union Jacks, all them English fans, for victory they were set. Until Ray Houghton got the ball and he stuck it in the net.
Hey! Hey! Thank you! Lovely!
What happened next is history, brought tears to many eyes. Oh, that day will be the highlight of many people's lives. Well, Joxer climbed right over the top, and the last time he was seen was arm in arm with Jack Charlton, singing revenge for Skibbereen. And a whacker's back in Inchicore, he's living with his mam. And Jack Charlton has been proclaimed an honorary Irishman. Yeah, listen, do you remember that German's daughter on the banks of the River Rhine? Lord, yes, didn't she? Didn't she show up in Ballyfermot last week?
Wonderful stuff from Christy Moore. Great song, Joxer, Goes to Stuttgart. I remember that well. I'm not a soccer fan by any stretch of the imagination, but sure, who wouldn't remember a great day like that? We're still celebrating it. Right, I'm going to do a quick break, come back to me just after that. I will be talking to Kieran O'Neill about his trip to Malaga and see what he found out about Robert Boyd when he was here in December.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, you may remember just before Christmas, I spoke to Kieran O'Neill, who is a Derry-based journalist. He met our Spanish-Irish cultural correspondent and consultant, Jose Antonio Sierra, in Derry last summer. And they got talking about Robert Boyd. And Kieran, being a journalist, became very interested because Robert came from Derry and decided he was going to go to Malaga. So we spoke to him before he went as to why he wanted to go and what he was hoping to find. And I said we'd catch up in the new year. It is the new year and Kieran joins me on the phone. Kieran, good to talk to you and happy new year.
Same to you, Jeff. Nice to speak to you again.
You were in, likewise by the way, you were in Malaga in early December to find out a little bit about Robert Boyd and to go to one of the annual ceremonies held in his honour. How did you get on?
Fantastic few days in Malaga. Yeah. Just to recap quickly on the story. The story revolves around a young man, young Irishman called Robert Boyd, who, as you say, was originally from Derry. He was born in Derry in 1805. And if we jump forward a few years, when he was 26 years of age in 1831, Robert Boyd was one of 49 men who led a rebellion in Spain against the then king, King Ferdinand. And the men were captured coming ashore at Malaga and they were executed within a couple of days. And they were killed on December 11th, 1831. So they are now remembered each year on December 11th. They are remembered at their commemoration ceremony in Malaga. So I again, as you said in your introduction, I had never heard of Robert Boyd,
yeah,
even though he comes from the same city as me. And the first I heard of it was in the summer. I met Jose Antonio at an event in Derry, and I was just fascinated by the story. So I wanted to go to Malaga to try and find out more about the story. Now, before I travelled to Malaga, I thought from the research that I had done that it was a great story. And I haven't been to Malaga and met a lot more people involved in the story. I think it's a fantastic story.
Right.
So it was a great trip all around. The guy who led the rebellion was a Spanish general called General Jose Maria Torrijos, who is a very famous historical figure in Spain. And there's a museum in Malaga in his honour and the honour of the other 48 men, including Robert Boyd, who died,
mm-hmm,
or who were executed in 1831. So they were killed for leading the rebellion against the king. It turned out then, a few years later, the king was overthrown. Anyway, he was regarded as someone very much of a tyrannical king. And then he was eventually overthrown a few years later. And the new King believed that Robert Boyd and the other men who were executed in Malaga had been kind of the beginning of the rebellion. So in their honour, they created a large monument in the middle of Malaga.
Mm-hmm.
And they're regarded as heroes in Malaga. Now Robert Boyd is buried in the English cemetery in Malaga. He was the only one. The other 48 are buried under the monument in the Plaza de la Merced in the centre of Malaga. But Boyd, because Boyd was a Protestant, he was not allowed to be buried in what they've seen as Catholic burial. So he was buried in the English cemetery in Malaga, which had only opened around the time of his death. Actually, he was the first person to be buried in the Protestant English cemetery in Malaga, which is still there. And I visited there during my time in Malaga and visited Boyd's grave. There's a monument in alongside his grave. There's a monument in the graveyard to him. So all in all, it was a fantastic trip. Found out so much more about this guy's story, and it's an amazing story, and I've continued on. I've done quite a lot more research on him. So all together, it's coming together, and it is, as I said, a fantastic story.
And did you travel with the camera crew?
I travel myself. I would do a film as well.
Okay.
So it was very much a kind of introductory visit, and I've done as much filming and interviewed a few people myself. But it's still very much at the early stages in terms of my plans for the documentary film on Robert Boyd. So it's just to go and meet as many people as I can. The commemoration events took part on this December 11th. I was able to film those, where it was almost like a pageant event, where there's a historical group there who, and they dress up in as the men who were executed and the soldiers, and you know, all in the period clothing. So it was a great spectacle. So I did a bit of filming myself, and now my plan would be to try and put together an almost like a trailer type short film, a couple of months long, to try and cram as much as I can of the story under that short teaser film, and then take that to maybe broadcasting organisations or funders to try and kind of bring the funding that together that would be needed for the film.
All right. And tell me, you went out there expecting, you know, you knew a certain amount of the story of Robert Boyd. Did you meet people that were able to fill in some gaps, if there were some gaps there for you, or maybe just extend your knowledge? Was it educational?
Very much so. The night before they were executed, they were held in a monastery in Malaga. The monastery, part of the monastery, is still standing. Actually, the room, it was the old refectory where they were held, is still there, and it's now a museum to the men. And there's a group which runs this museum, and the wealth of information they were able to provide me with was amazing.
Right.
And then folks, various other people, those who managed the English cemetery where Boyd is buried were another great source of information. So picked up a huge amount of helpful information. Been through the British Archive in London, and they had quite a lot of information about Boyd's previous life. Previously, he had joined the East India Company, which was he joined the military side of the East India Company, which was kind of a weird public-private company, which more or less ran India for hundreds of years. But they had an army, and Boyd had gone there. When he left Ireland, he joined that East India Company and was there for quite a few years and then left. And through the British Archive, we found out that he actually went absent without leave.
All right.
And then we know that he met the leaders of the Spanish Rebellion in London in the late 1820s and was sort of, you know, convinced to join them. It seems to have been a bit of an adventure with a military background, so he was attracted to their cause. And that's why he ended up in Spain a couple of years later. So bit by bit, the story, when I started out that day, I met Jose Antonio in Derry. I'd never heard of Robert Boyd. Now I know a lot more about him, having been to Spain, having done a lot of research on it. And as I said at the beginning, I think it's what I thought originally was a good story, and now I know it's a great story. So the plan is now to just to keep researching and keep plugging away at it and see where it goes from here.
And since you've returned from Malaga, Kieran, have you written anything maybe in local newspapers or anything that might, you know, further people's interest in Robert?
Yeah, well, not, I haven't got round to that yet, but the Christmas holidays, it just, I didn't think it was the right time. But the plan is now in the new year to really put a strong focus on it. So I'm going to write a few articles. People here are already getting to know the story a bit more, but I want to put a few more details on it. So now that would be the plan as well, to try and raise awareness of the story, particularly around my plans for the documentary, and then see what kind of support we can drum up for it. Because the bottom line is, like, for to make something like this, you would need funding or to be able to raise the necessary funding. And it's not, you know, so that would be the next stage, you know, bringing the story together and then trying to see what support is out there for it. You know, if I can't get the funding necessary, you know, we can push ahead with it anyway, but it would be nice, you know, to have that support behind it. I think, even if not, I'm determined to push ahead with it, because I think it's just a great story, and it's a story that's never been told. And I think it would be a story which would be of interest to, obviously, people in Ireland and people in Spain, but this guy just seems to be in such a unique kind of character that I think it would be of interest to so many people, just interested in a great story.
Now, I know that Jose Antonio Sierra has tremendous energy, and he's very passionate about things that he believes in and causes that he would support. And you would have seen that in Northern Ireland when he visited last year. I presume he kept you extremely busy in Malaga, did he?
He was absolutely fantastic, a wonderful man, and he looked after me so well. As you said, a man, he was so energetic, so I would have been totally lost without him. He had arranged for me to meet so many people and guided me through the language barriers and everything. It was just fantastic. So I'm delighted that this project would be nowhere without Jose Antonio, without his support and enthusiasm. So he has been such a help to me, and hopefully that help will continue. And between us, we'll make this story a reality.
Great. And you'll have to come back to Malaga, I presume, on a number of occasions.
I would assume to. As I said, the visit in December was mainly, I wanted to see the commemoration events on December 11th, so it was really, I had to go then. But ideally, no, I would hope to get back at least a couple of occasions to push the project further on.
Great. Well, I look forward to maybe catching up with you on one of those visits if we happen to be in Spain at the very same time. And in the meantime, can I say thank you for joining me on the programme today to give me an update on your visit. I'm glad it went so well, and I wish you well with putting all of the bits and pieces together that you need to do so for the future. And if we can do anything on the programme, do please let us know, won't you?
Fantastic. Yeah, I will do. Thanks so much for your time.
Kieran O'Neill, thank you very much. And again, Happy New Year to you and yours.
Thank you. Bye.
You live.
Second time that you've heard the Miami Show Band on the program. A little earlier, Dickie Rock was at number one with the Miami. This day back in 1964, and we played There's Always Me. A little bit rowdier in the 1970s with the late Fran O'Toole at the helm of the band there. That's a song called Clap Your Hands. And thanks again to Ciarán O'Neill for joining us from Derry this evening on the program to talk to us about his trip to Malaga some time ago. Alrighty. Oh, sorry, by the way, we played Miami Show Band and Clap Your Hands because Steve Travers, one of the surviving members from that horrific Miami Show Band massacre just over the border back in about 1975, I think, wasn't it? But anyway, Steve celebrates his birthday next Sunday. He was born on that day in 1951, and that's why we've played it for you today. There is one more part left in the programme, and it's a lovely part. Join me, please, shortly.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome to the final part of the programme, the first programme of 2020. I sincerely hope that you have been enjoying it thus far. If you know anything about Irish radio or television, the name Marion Finucane will be no stranger to you. And on Thursday, just before 6 o'clock, RTE, the Irish state broadcaster, announced the sudden death of one of its most popular presenters, that being Marion Finucane. Now, Marion joined the broadcaster in 1970 or in the 1970s and hosted a number of radio and television programmes in recent days. So many tributes have been paid to her and a number of common themes have emerged. Her work for women's rights, her impartiality, her kindness to her guests on both radio and television, her warmth, her wicked sense of humour, her ability to get the best out of her guests, and her complete professionalism that ensured that she always got to the heart of the matter and never allowed a guest to sidestep a question. She was a mammoth name. She was a mammoth talent in broadcasting in Ireland, and I suppose really it would be fitting to mention her and to pay a little tribute to her. I did want to pay a tribute to Marion Finucane this evening. And listening to her at full tilt is probably the best way of doing so. And so many clips have been played over the last week or so since the death was, or her death was announced. I'm going to play a clip today of Marion interviewing a junior minister at the Department of Enterprise in 2001 in the wake of the 9/11 attacks. Now, the possibility of an attack on the United Kingdom was a concern at the time. And in particular, for Irish people, an attack on the Sellafield nuclear plant, which is only a few miles from the east coast of Ireland. The Irish government announced plans to issue iodine tablets to every household in Ireland, and a plan was put in place in the event of such an attack, and this was meant to make us all feel a whole lot better. An information leaflet was to be distributed to every household in the country that would contain all of the information that we would require. And Junior Minister Joe Jacob was wheeled out to explain it all and to put the nation at ease about the whole thing, be it an attack or the response to it. It was decided that he should go on the Marion Finucane radio programme. Now, I'm going to play a little clip of that interview. It's about 5 minutes long, but I think you'll enjoy it. We joined the interview about 5 minutes into it, but Marion is concerned about how exactly we're going to get the iodine tablets. And as the interview progresses, she counts the minutes from when the theoretical attack occurred. This is classic Marion Finucane.
Well, say it's a bad situation.
If it's a bad...
Say a plane crashed into Sellafield. Say the wind was blowing this way. And it all happened 8 minutes ago.
Yes.
What advice do we give to our citizens and what happens?
I'm telling you that is in if a plane crashed in Sellafield, that is we're talking about a very major
correct.
Accident there.
Correct.
Something that a great power like the United States weren't geared to cope with last week.
Yeah.
We would tell people the situation and they would know from again this famous fact sheet that I'm talking about.
But tell me what to do.
Well, I'm telling you what
You're going to give me the fact sheet in a couple of weeks' time and I'll read it. But I'm talking now, it happened 9 minutes ago.
9 minutes ago, I'm telling you, first of all, information. Emergency through all means of communication, such as I have issued. I have itemized.
Do I tell the kids in those buses, if there was anybody listening to it, to turn back home? Do I tell people to stay indoors?
Yes. All right, Marion, I tell you what you would do. That's the first thing you would do, and we call it sheltering. We would say, please remain indoors. Say with your doors and windows closed. Switch off your ventilation systems. We want you to minimise your exposure to the levels of radiation that are now currently, God forbid, out of doors. Now, that's a very particularly effective and it's a relatively simple one. So sheltering is the most likely to be appropriate.
How do you mean shelter?
Sheltering is the terminology we use for what you're saying, remaining indoors. They'd move on then and we would be talking about iodine tablets, taking tablets which would contain non-radioactive iodine.
Yeah, how do we get our iodine tablets?
Now, the Department of Health will have stocks of these and that's one of the things that have to be tweaked. I hope we're making good ground, Marion.
No, but I mean, when do I need my iodine? Dorothy rang it, she said. If she weren't frightened already or before, she certainly is now. And she's not reassured by what she's saying because all he has said in different ways is that there's a fact sheet coming out and that you don't know what's in it, Minister.
Marion, I have it in my hand. So I know exactly what's in the fact sheet. And well, the fact sheet will be in every home, in over a million homes in Ireland.
Sorry, Minister, I appreciate that. And this is very serious, I know. But we're now 14 minutes into my warning. Yeah. And all I have got so far is just saying shelter, get off the bike, get into shelter.
Yes.
Marianne, don't drink the water.
Yes, yes. Take your iodine tablet.
Yeah, how did I get my iodine tablet?
That will be in the fact sheet when it gets to your home, okay?
No, but you Marianne, tell me, no, you have no, the fact sheet Marianne, in front of you. How do I get my iodine tablet?
I'm grateful for that intervention you made because we mustn't be alarmistic.
Minister, here we are. We're heading now we're 15 and a half minutes in. How do I get my iodine tablet? It's written on that fact sheet. Yes, tell me.
Yes, you'll get them from the Department of Health and Children and they will be maintaining stocks of these iodine tablets for this purpose. And
how do I get them?
The specific, as soon as you need them, the excellent communication process that you and I talked about a few moments ago clicks into gear and that will say exactly how that is to be done.
I've taken shelter.
You've taken shelter.
I'm in my house. I've sealed the windows.
Right.
How do I get my iodine tablet?
You will be told that when we're in emergency. We're not in emergency situation. And as I said, that is one of the finer points that we wanted to deal with, the actual mechanics of doing that. And perhaps
what does it say in the fact sheet?
What it says in the fact sheets are that arrangements are being made I'll tell you precisely what it's saying at now, and this will be more explicit when it goes out. The draft I'm reading at the moment, as you asked the question, from the National Emergency Plan for Nuclear Accidents fact sheet.
It's 17 minutes past. Where do I get my iodine
tablet? You will get your iodine tablet. You may have it in your home when we decide that.
Right.
Or you may have, there may be distribution centres around the country organised by the Department of Health and Children whose responsibility it will be, A, to maintain stocks of them and to provide them via distribution centres, or perhaps we're considering having a file in every home with the fact sheet that you and I are discussing now.
Minister, can I just put an overall question to you? Do you feel confident that if something dreadful did happen, which it hasn't happened and won't happen, listeners, we hope, in Sellafield, do you feel confident that the proper preparations have been made to protect the citizens?
Marion, can I say this to you with the greatest certitude? I feel as confident after putting 2 years' work, the RPI, my department, other departments, independent consultants, to put what is described as the best nuclear emergency plan in Europe in place.
Now, another caller. I am amazed at the apparent total lack of any knowledge on the part of the minister in charge. I'd feel safer with Captain Mannering of Dad's Army in charge.
As I said in the introduction, classic Marion Finucane, or Yeshde, Rev, Hanum Dealish. May she rest in peace. Marion Finucane, it is very difficult to imagine that on Saturday and Sunday mornings, no longer will we hear the dulcet tones of Marion Finucane and the wisdom that used to come from the radio on many, many occasions. So there you have it. The late Marion Finucane, who passed away suddenly last Thursday. Before we finish the programme, a number of people were in touch with me. And by the way, if you would like to get in contact with the programme at any stage, email is the best way to do that. GER, GER@TRE.radio. And back on the 16th of December, I presented to you the top 10 favourite Irish songs or artists as chosen by Talk Radio Europe listeners. That'd be you now, right? And I received so many emails prior to it with people telling me what they would like to hear and what they think should be in the top 10. And we collated all of that and we produced what we consider to be a fairly representative top 10. And a number of people contacted me over the Christmas to know, would I do the rundown or would I play a few songs from it again? And we'll do all of that, absolutely. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to give you the top 10 as we presented it back on the 16th of December. At number 10, favourite artist, Paul Brady. And the song that I chose to play for you on the day was a song called Nobody Knows. The Saw Doctors from County Galway were in there at number 9 with the song called I Used to Love Her. At number 8, the song called Sweet 16 by Davy Arthur and the Fury Brothers, and a very popular one that is as well. The Dubliners were at number 7, and the song that I chose to play for you was a song called The Town I Love So Well. They do such a beautiful version of that, a great song written by Phil Coulter all those years ago. Van Morrison had to be in the top 10, I presume, and he was there at number 6, and the song that I chose was Have I Told You Lately That I Love You. At number 5, U2 featured Sometimes You Can't Make It On Your Own is the song that I chose to play for you. A kind of a different kind of a U2 song, but I thought it would be appropriate, and a lot of people commented on it, which is nice, so thank you very much for that. I don't suppose you could have an Irish top 10 without Makeham and Clancy featuring, or Liam Clancy for certain, but Makeham and Clancy were in there at number 4. And Place in the Choir is the song that I chose to play for you at the time. Enya has been for many years Ireland's best-selling musical artist, and she featured in our top 10 at number 3. I played for you Marble Halls, or it used to be known as I Dreamt I Dwelt in Marble Halls, beautiful song. And again, very favourably received, I'm glad to say. Sinead O'Connor was at number 2 with Nothing Compares to You, the Prince song that she made her own, really. And it's such a haunting version of it. It's fantastic. And at number 1 was the wonderful Christy Moore. Now, you heard Christy Moore before. On the programme, we played Joxer Goes to Stuttgart. So I'm not going to play Christy Moore for you. And the song that we played on the day was a song called Ordinary Man. So there we go. That's the top 10 as voted by yourselves. I'm actually going to play an Irish song that I was surprised wasn't in the top 10. But I suppose Luke Kelly and the Dubliners kind of covered it. And the reason I'm playing this particular song to play out is because during the week and the many tributes that were paid to broadcaster Marion Finucane, it was a song that she chose as being her favourite when she signed off on one of her programmes at one point. So I'm going to play that in memory of Marion Finucane, if that's all right. And with that, I shall say goodbye to you. Back again next week at the same time for another Live On Air. Please join me if you can. Thank you to my guests today. Thank you to Ciarán O'Neill. Thank you very much to Patricia for her story about the Street of the Irish. Thank you for listening. And as always, can I say thank you to our Spanish-Irish cultural correspondent and consultant, José Antonio Sierra, for the work that he puts in for Live On Air on a daily basis. Look after yourselves until next week and each other. Until then, from me, Ger Sweeney, bye-bye now.
On Raglan Road of an autumn day I saw her first and knew that her dark hair would weave a snare, that I might one day rue. I saw the danger and I passed along the enchanted way, and I said, let grief be a fallen leaf at the dawning of the day. On Grafton Street in November, we tripped lightly along the ledge of a deep ravine where can be seen the worth of passion's pledge, the queen of hearts still making tart, and I not making hay. Oh, I loved too much, and by such is happiness thrown away. I gave her gifts of the mind, I gave her the secret sign that's known to the artists who have known the true gods of sound and the stone, and word and tint without stint. I gave her poems to say with her own name there and her own dark hair like clouds over fields of May. On a quiet street where old ghosts meet, I see her walking now away from me so hurriedly. My reason must allow that I had loved not as I should a creature made of clay. When the angel woos, the clay he'd lose his wings at the dawn of day.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.